This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. It was Lexington's Doug Cumming who suggested I talk with his friend Doug Harwood. One Doug describes the other Doug as the crusty, romantic, disheveled editor of his feisty one-man news magazine monthly, The Rockbridge Advocate. Doug Harwood came to Lexington in 1970 to attend Washington and Lee and has never left. With his weekly music show, The Anti-Headache Machine, broadcast on the WNL station for the last 40 years, and his steadfast production of The Rockbridge Advocate, Doug Harwood is, and he isn't, part of the fabric of Rockbridge County. I loved the quote you sent me from Aurora Borealis Linksweiler.
Yes.
Please, I'm reading it, but you tell us what Ms. Linksweiler had to say.
Well, Ms. Linksweiler, who I never had the privilege of meeting her, but I love people with unusual names, and the pictures that those names draw, and you start wondering how they got those names. So her name just kind of stuck in my head when I first heard it, and Aurora once told a friend of mine, "Oh, he's all right. He just doesn't remember that if he ain't from here, he ain't from here." Which kind of sums up the way the folks who are from Rockbridge County and from Lexington think about people who have moved in there over the years. And there's this very kind of strong notion, you're either from here or you ain't. And if you ain't, you ought to remember that.
What does it mean that you ought to remember it? How would you demonstrate that you remembered it?
Well, to have a certain respect for the people who, you know, who were born and raised there and whose families really made the county what it is now. And everybody who goes to Rockbridge County thinks, well, not everyone, but everyone who moves there thinks this is the most magical, wonderful place on the planet. And a lot of them, the next thing they do is say, but it's all got to change and be just like where I was from. And the natives, they're a little leery about all that. And I found, I guess, partly because I was raised in a sort of an old farming little town in New England, in Massachusetts, where people had a lot of the same attitude. And the best way to kind of fit in is just to listen and pay attention and be nice and not try to push anybody around or for heaven's sake, say, where I came from, we did this. And because that just makes the natives kind of bristle. They get a little restless with that. And the simplest thing to do is just enjoy them and try and learn from them and have some respect for them and not kind of throw your weight around going, I went to Harvard and I went to Yale, and I made $1 million, and I did this. They really don't care. They're not very impressed. And a lot of things that work as kind of status in cities and in other parts of the country don't work well in Rockbridge County because people aren't impressed with your money. In fact, if anything, they resent it a little bit. And they're perfectly content with things the way they are.
You went to Washington and Lee?
Yes.
Did you leave Lexington after college?
No, I hate to move. And when I got out of college, I was living on this beautiful old farm that I was renting for a whopping $150 a month. And I thought, well, now I can go off and be in a big city and try and make some money and maybe write some advertisements for somebody or do something and then retire and buy a little piece of paradise. Or heck, I could just stay here and rent it. And I don't have the ambition gene. So, it never occurred to me that I ought to get a career doing something. I was just living where I wanted to live and finding jobs to support that and to keep me there. The first job I had when I got out of college was washing dishes at the Holiday Inn. And I hung my diploma over the sink. I was happy as a clam. It was probably the last honest job I ever had. And eventually, I got a job with a little radio station up in Waynesboro, WAYB, which is defunct now, not because of my years there, but I don't think so, at least. At WAYB, I did the graveyard shift. Played music from, I guess, 6 to midnight or 8 to midnight. And one night, there was a news director there. His name was Ray. I forget his last name. This was a little squirrely guy. And he came in one night after doing his, putting his little newscast together, and he said, "Doug, I'm quitting." And I said, "Really? Why?" And he said, "I just got a job as a prison guard, so you're going to be the news director." Well, that should have told me something right there, but I was an idiot, and I said, "Okay, I'll be the news director." And about a week later, I was in the WAYB Action News car, which was a Valiant, as I recall, with a shortwave radio into it, and I was leaving the station garage at 8 o'clock in the morning, listening to the March of the Morning that WAYB played every morning, on my way down to the cop shop to see who had gotten mugged the night before. And I was just a hippie kid straight out of college. This was so surreal and weird, it just bit me. And I enjoyed the heck out of it and learned a ton about doing the news and about getting along with people who normally I'd have nothing to do with. And it was just fun and rewarding for me. And at the time, there were a couple of radio stations around doing news and this fierce competition to scoop everybody. And so I did that for a couple of years. And then, but I still lived down in Rockbridge County, and the commute got old after a while, especially after somebody shot at me while I was riding home.
Was this an irate subject of one of your stories, or just a random?
Well, I don't know.
Mad guy.
I don't know who he was. He was drunk, fortunately, and so he missed. But I was riding home. I had a nice MG convertible, and it was a lovely spring day. I was riding down Route 11 listening to some music going.
What year was this?
1975.
Okay, I wanted to place the MG convertible. Okay, go on with the story, please.
And riding down Route 11 listening to something or other in the tape machine and just looking around going, this is heaven. And I hear this pickup truck pulling up behind me. And before I knew it, he was next to me, and this guy who was just frothing at the mouth was screaming obscenities at me. Well, I don't remember that I ever saw him before, and I looked over at him and shrugged my shoulders and sort of went, "I don't know what you're talking about." And the next thing I knew, he had reached into his glove compartment, pulled out a pistol, and was reinforcing his torrent of obscenities with a few shots. Well, he unloaded the thing, and it was fortunately it was only a six-shooter. And as I said, fortunately he was drunk, and so he missed. But I saw those bullets go by. I saw my life going by before me. I was thinking, "Oh, my word, I need to give last rites here." But anyway, I learned something, and what I learned was how fast the MG could go, which was, I think it was about 104 miles an hour, and hoped I'd get pulled over and stopped for speeding on the way back to Lexington, but of course that didn't happen. And I got back there, wound up in a saloon, and called the police up in Augusta County and reported this. And the first thing the dispatcher or whoever was talking to me said was, "Well, did you get his license plate number?" I said, "You know, I didn't have a pen, and I didn't want to take my hands off the wheels and get a good look at the license plate. I was kind of trying to dodge the bullets." And they weren't terribly helpful about the whole thing, or I didn't think so, but that was the end of that. I never saw the man again. I'd recognize him if I saw him now. I'll just never forget that face contorted with anger.
I guess if somebody shoots at you, they do make an impression on you, don't
they?
Well,
the critics can be a little brutal around here. You know, in New York City, they just close the show. That's the end of it.
The Rockbridge Advocate. When did that come along?
In 1992, in February, after my Waynesboro job. I left there and I went to, there was a radio station in Lexington that was looking for someone to start a local news department. So I did that for a few years and left in a huff, actually. And then I went to work.
I have to ask about the huff. Do you talk about this, or is this forever sealed?
Oh, no, it's entirely too painful and I'm sworn to secrecy. No, what happened was that at the time, another radio station had opened up, and there was this getting to be this ferocious competition for advertising. And the manager of the station walked in one day and told me I was going to run a news story about a furniture store sale. And I said, "A sale at a furniture store? No, that's not news." And she said, "Yes, it is. We're trying to get their account." And I said, I'm real glad we're trying to get their account, but no, it's still not news. And she said, yes, it is. And I said, well, then you're going to have to find somebody else. And I walked out the door, and that was the end of that. So I went from there to saloon tending for a year or so. And then I got a job with the Buena Vista newspaper and wound up being there for about a dozen years. And I was the editor and one of the writers, and it was big fun. But I wound up leaving there in a huff in 1992 and kind of said, now what do I do? So
what was that huff about?
Well, it was kind of...
I like huffs. They're interesting stories.
Well, the paper over in Buena Vista was owned by a man in Clifton Forge, and one day he decided he was going to come over and run the paper, and it just got real obvious to me I couldn't stay there. So I left. He actually was getting ready to start a daily, which I thought was a little nuts in Rockbridge County. So I walked out and thought to myself, well, now what? And, well, getting a job flipping hamburgers didn't strike me as terribly appealing. And some people I knew down in Rockbridge County kind of encouraged me to start something. And I guess the reason why is in my years in Buena Vista and at the radio station, I kind of, I had broken an awful lot of stories and relished writing about scandals that nobody else really wrote about. And some people thought it was a good thing for the community to have a kind of a resident muckraker, I guess.
Can you put that in context a little bit? What needed to be raked by Mr. Muck?
Oh, the leaves. No. For every little community and big community, you know, every once in a while, it's public institutions crash and burn. And, you know, if you wait long enough and you're patient long enough and you keep your eye on anything, there's bound to be a scandal. And Lexington is sort of the home of euphemizing. We don't, you know, we like to whisper about scandals, but not a lot of, there weren't any real news organizations, local ones, that were covering local scandals. The Roanoke Times at the time had a bureau in Lexington, and they did a fine job digging up some scandals, but other than that, they're... these things just didn't exist. And dumb Yankee that I am, I just didn't see any reason to sweep them all under the rug. And I didn't, you know, socialize with a lot of people who were had some power or thought they had some power. And so over the years, I wrote about, crooked cops and perverted prosecutors and assorted shenanigans with the hospital and... You name it. I mean, you know, you pick an institution that can fall apart.
And they do.
And I always thought, well, you know, people ought to know about this and what they do with the information is up to them, but at least they ought to have it.
How did you start the paper? Did you just, you know, go
I was an idiot, and it was kind of a Mickey Rooney sort of thing. Gee, kids, let's start a paper. And I had a partner starting it, a woman named Kitty Sachs, she kind of handled the business of it, and I handled the news of it. And, you know, we went and shook the trees and managed to come up with a little bit of money, because neither of us had a penny ourselves. And we came up with enough to put out the first issue. And people around town, some people loved it and some people didn't. And fortunately, a lot of people came up to me and said,
well, you put out the first issue. Anybody can do that. You'll never put out another one.
And I thought, well, just to spite you, I'm going to put out another one. And spite can be a terrific motivation. And the more I'd hear,
oh, you'll never keep doing this,
I thought, I am just to ruin your day, actually. And it was tough going for a few years, like every small business is. And when you start it... you know, at first you're the talk of the town and you think, oh, this is going to fly and I can go back and light, you know, smoke cigars and cash checks and everything will be peachy. And of course, it doesn't work that way. And the novelty wears off, and then you start looking at the books going, gulp. But I was persistent, and fortunately, I didn't have a family to support, and I didn't, you know, when I was living cheap in this, and people were awfully kind to me over the years and helpful, and I've just never forgotten that. And now the paper seems to be, you know, reasonably stable. I don't worry about it like I used to, mm-hmm. and I don't spend every, you know, every other night biting my fingernails going, oh, my word, how am I going to pay the printer now? You know, it's got a loyal audience, and people in the community seem to either love it or hate it. But that's the way a paper ought to be. You know, and my granddaddy used to go and get the Boston Globe every Sunday, and he'd pick it up, and half the time he'd throw it down. And I'd say, Granddaddy, what are you throwing down? Why are you buying that thing if you're throwing it down? And he said, any paper that doesn't irritate the hell out of me isn't worth reading. Because news, a lot of it's disturbing. And a lot of, you know, when we read about things in our community that we like and we assume are just chugging along and everything's fine with them, and we read that something's not fine, you know, our initial reaction is, well, shoot the messenger. And we get angry at whoever delivers that bad news. And then the time goes by and we go, well, wait a minute. Maybe they were just kind of doing their duty. And maybe it's not the messenger's fault. At least some people figure that out.
The Rockbridge Advocate, the lead stories, not the coverage of activities of daily living and things, but the lead stories, the ones that you pick to cover, mm-hmm. are those the just generally the ones that speak to you? That pique your interest?
Well, I'm kind of curious, and so almost everything piques my interest. You have to, it's one of the things, if you're a journalist or even thinking about being a journalist, if you're not incredibly curious, you should forget about it, unless you want to be a TV weather person and look nice and get your hair blow dried every day.
So tell me about this radio show you've been doing for 40 years on the WNL student station, please.
Well, it's something I started doing when I was a student at Washington and Lee. It's a music show, and that's all it is. The fun of it is putting music together from all over the world and all different times and making it fit together and somehow flow and, on a good night at least, paint some sort of a picture. I'm kind of a creature of habit, and so I just kept doing the show, and I enjoyed it so much, and it was this magical chance to play with the radio and be on the radio or to do radio. So over the years, I've just kept doing it. And since it's Saturday night, it's a student radio station. And there aren't a lot of students who want to show up every Saturday night and do much of anything that doesn't involve partying. So nobody ever tried to get the slot, and I just kept doing it. And the years went by, and my music collection just kind of kept growing. And I've always enjoyed it. There's not a single Saturday that I've ever gone, oh, darn, I've got to go in and do that thing.
Saturday night.